Welcome to the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. I am Allison Katzkowski, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in to check out exactly what we're talking about. Self-care means so many things to people. It's one of the reasons I decided to start this show. And you'll hear self-care discussed from a number of different angles in this space. I am grateful to have you with me, and I hope you get a lot out of what I'm going to share with you today.
Hey, everybody. It's Allison Katzkowski. Thanks for joining me again today for another edition of the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care podcast. This is our very successful Tuesday flagship show. And as always, I'm always excited to be with you every Tuesday morning. And most of the time, you get to hear me interview really amazing guests. These are masters of their craft. These are people that really are contributing, not just to professional development in general, but to their industry. And they're really, really, really helping us hone in more on the definition of what true self-care actually is. Happy New Year to all of you listening. This is very early in 2026. If you're just tuning in to us for the very first time, we're super excited that you are choosing to spend some of your time with us. Today, my guest is Dr. Sage Breslin, who is coming to us from New Jersey. She is a licensed psychologist, but she's also a coach, and she's certified in multiple states, like licensed to coach in multiple states, which I think is really unique. We've interviewed a lot of therapists. We've interviewed a lot of people on this show that are unique to what they do, but because of state boundaries and all of that, it makes them limited somewhat as to what they can do. But we're going to dive in today into a topic that I think a lot of women think about a lot. I know I have a lot of friends who this has been a topic of conversation, and that is, how do we ditch the narcissist tag from our life? In other words, how do we manage and ultimately get rid of those toxic relationships, those relationships that can literally keep us putting ourselves last? Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yay. So tell my audience a little bit about you first. And obviously, I already said what you do, but I think it would help if you explained a little bit about your business, your journey, obviously what brought you to do what you do.
Sure. Absolutely. So I, as you said, I'm a licensed psychologist and coach. I'm also a speaker and best-selling author. I work primarily with highly achieving professional women who have been derailed or lost their mojo as a result of toxic relationships. So my very niche brand is that I help women ditch the narcissist magnet. And what sets me a little bit apart is that I recently have been accepted by, in our industry, it's called SciPact. And instead of just being licensed in a few states, I am now licensed in 44 states.
Wow.
So it allows me not only to coach and counsel, but really to go deeper with clients from all over the United States. And I also have global, you know, international clients as well. So yeah, it sets me apart a little bit, allows me to really do what I do while I'm following my rules and regulations, you know, to the T.
Totally. Yeah.
I get that.
So tell us then a little bit about why you do your work, because obviously this is a very specific niche. And I'm wondering if maybe it's personal significance for you, or maybe it's because you have lots of people in your life who maybe it's been personal significance for.
It is something deeply personal for me. I was a trauma psychologist for 25 years, loved it, still love it, but it's very heavy lifting.
Right.
And in 2016, I had gone through a divorce, but I still hadn't been able to get my ex-husband out of the house. And try as I wanted to, I just could not get him to budge. And in 2016, I started to feel just some symptoms that wouldn't go away. And I went to all sorts of doctors, and everybody just said, "You're fine. You're just depressed." And I kept on saying to them, "I'm not depressed anymore, actually.
Yeah,
I got divorced. Like, I
pulled the trigger and I did it, right?"
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And yeah, it was not pleasant having him there in the house. But, you know, in my mind, I thought, I'm going to find a way. Like, eventually he went on vacation and I put all his stuff in storage. And, you know, when he tried to return, I, you know, said, you know, "You need to get another place." But it was in the middle of the night. I let him sleep on the couch. And eventually I rented him a room in a house and, you know, handed him the key and said, "You got to go." Unfortunately, it became much more difficult than that. And eventually he was engaged to leave the residence. But at that time, I really didn't know how significant that stress, that toxic stress, was on my body.
Totally.
And within a year, I had been diagnosed with multiple myeloma, bone marrow cancer.
Yeah. Yep.
And I, you know, during my cancer journey, I just, in my meditations, I just kept on getting this opportunity, like, you can die to him or you can die to this. And, you know, or you can choose to live. Mm-hmm. And I went through bone marrow transplant and chemotherapy and now an antibody treatment. And I'm now, for the first time, you know, in my second year of remission.
Wonderful.
And doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. And it was during that cancer journey that I heard very specifically, you've got to do the work that you do on yourself.
Yeah.
And I'd had lots and lots of therapists and experientials, you know.
Totally.
It wasn't for lack of trying.
Yeah.
But I really had to dig deep and understand why it was that I had maintained that relationship for so long, why I'd had other relationships like it, because I was a frequent flyer.
As history repeats itself, usually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And if we've got the roots for it, which I did, you got to suss it all out and you have to eradicate the roots. Mm-hmm. And then you have to really put your soul back in the driver's seat, which most of us, when we're in danger, we put that in the vault, make sure nobody can get at it. And some of us remember to take it back out and let it do the work, but most of us leave it in the vault.
And no, that's true. I think it's just, it's human nature, but we want to avoid what's uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And during the, after my bone marrow transplant, about 6 months later, I had a meditation that was, to me, miraculous, mm-hmm. because it finally taught me what to do that wasn't being done. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know any other therapist that was doing the work this way. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, it's worth a try. And I tried it on myself. And all of a sudden, life started to change. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll start using it on my clients. Mm-hmm. And their lives started to change.
Yeah.
I have something here that's a gift that I can begin to offer other women like myself.
Yeah.
And it has become an entire program and a community and just a different way of healing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so let's start there then. So tell me then, what exactly, in your view, and I've had people on the show before where we've talked about this, but give me your textbook definition, if you will, of what the narcissist tag actually means. Like, what does it mean? What does a toxic relationship mean? Let's just start there.
Well, interestingly, in my work, in the work that I do, when I refer to ditching the narcissist magnet, it's not just narcissists.
Yeah.
It's sociopaths.
Totally.
And people with low-functioning borderline personality disorder. So it's folks that have these diagnostic labels, but that don't have a functional sense of self. They can't feed themselves. They don't regulate their own emotions. They are hostily dependent on others for emotional regulation, for their juice, for their power.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it's validation or kudos or whatever it is, they have to rely on others. Mm-hmm. And so they look for the best source of food, if you will, or fuel. And old soul women like myself tend to have really good juju, and we're good game. The higher functioning you are,
that's true,
the much more fun you are for a
nurse. Well, and my opinion has always been that, you know, people who can't necessarily do it on their own, you know, whether they have the skill set or not, are attracted to people who do.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So, you know, for me, narcissist, we actually broaden the label to kind of pick up all of these pathological folks who, in relationship, they perform pathologically.
Yeah. Well, so, and it's a form of manipulation when it comes down to it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's manipulate the situation so that I get what I want.
Yes. Their lives depend on manipulation. So they are really good at it.
Yeah.
Like you and I, we could not compete with that.
Yeah.
And that is part of the problem is that we, you know, whether or not we see the red flags, once we are under that manipulative spell, it is really difficult to break free, because the more they manipulate, the more we're broken down, the more we're depleted, the more we get derailed, and the harder it is for us to sort of get that courage to exit. And sometimes, you know, we have applied a coping system called Stockholm Syndrome, where we simply accept their reality as our own.
Yeah.
It is a way to stay alive in a dangerous relationship. It appeases them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the more we buy into their realities,
let's not upset the apple cart. Let's keep everything where it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we begin to forget our own reality.
Yeah.
So the further we get away from our own reality, the harder it is to leave.
Which I find really, and I'm just going to call this out for what it is, just because I know this is your wheelhouse. And I don't mean this to sound harsh or crass at all, but I just don't know any other way to say it than this. You would think, from a logical standpoint, and obviously logic is only a very small piece of this, we don't make a lot of these decisions from the logical part of our brain, obviously. But when you're high achieving and you're functional and you're successful and you're smart and all those things, I think it's very easy to be culpable to somebody who does not have that, right? And on one hand, you think, wow, you know, you're so smart, you should know better. But it's really not that simple.
No, it's not.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think the other piece of my niche that is I'm very out about it is I work with old soul women.
Yeah.
And we old soul women, we are here. We're placed on the earth with a mission. Okay. Heal, uplift, and serve others. Okay. That's our job. It's like part of our DNA, if you will. Mm-hmm. So when we get around narcissists and their pathological siblings, when we get around them, what we feel or experience is the gaping need.
Yeah.
We feel it. You know, it's like being near a hungry baby.
Yeah.
You will immediately reach for the baby and find what the baby needs to be fed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if there's a mother who needs to nurse, you're going to suss that mother out. Get over here. Feed this baby.
Right.
If there's formula on the counter, like, that's what you're going to do, because you're driven to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And we are driven to solve that problem, but at a much more foundational level. Mm-hmm. So we seek to fill the need.
Yeah.
We don't question it. We don't see the red flags attached to the need.
Yeah. Well, and to some degree, you could argue that it fills a part of you to be able to do that.
Absolutely. You're serving your mission.
Yeah.
Of course. You're going to feel great about it.
Yeah.
And I would say to you that I think a large majority of the high achieving women in leadership roles are old soul women.
Yeah.
They might not say that about themselves. They may not describe themselves that way, but I'll bet other people have described them that way.
Yeah.
Because they have that innate, you know, eternal power source, if you will. They're plugged in. And when they're plugged in, they're energizer bunnies, which of course make them good game for a narcissist.
Well, and I think when you're a giver, you know, it's easy to fall into that trap too. And I can think of times in my life when I've done that, but I can also think of lots of people that I know who've done it a lot as well. So I don't think we're talking about anything that's a foreign concept here.
No, I would guess that once we unpack it, we see it more and more and more, and it's easier to identify.
Yeah.
You know, I think for many, many decades, people thought of the women who were in these dangerous relationships or toxic relationships as somehow broken. They had histories of trauma. They themselves had borderline personality. They were needy. They were underachieving, whatever, right? Fill in all the rest of those blanks. And there's a team here on the East Coast that did a tremendous amount of research. And what they discovered in their research was none of that was the case. Yeah. A very, very small percentage of the women were in that category. Most of them, though, had characteristics and skills that that they had in common. Things like they're highly collaborative. They want to work with you. They're concerned about the outcome for people.
Yeah,
they're concerned about the mental health and well-being of other people. And they had all of these characteristics and values And I looked at them, and the more I read them, I thought, well, that's very funny. These are old soul women. This is how you would describe them. And, you know, sure enough, it's not the poor, needy, depressed, dependent, traumatized women that are in these relationships a lot of the time. Not that there aren't those.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it is the high achieving, bright, talented, highly educated woman who has come across a need, filled the need. And as soon as that need is filled, you know, another one appears and they move into this relationship with the master manipulator who is happy to feed on them. That's why we refer to them as soul suckers.
Yeah. Well, they are energy vampires.
Absolutely. And the more they feed, the more depleted the woman becomes. Because again, remember, she has put her soul in safekeeping. And so now she's the meat suit.
Yeah.
She's now only accessing human power.
Yeah. And well, and so I just want to be clear that a toxic relationship is more than just a romantic relationship. It could be,
absolutely,
you know, a familial relationship. It could be a friend. It could be a workplace relationship, even a neighbor, like whatever.
Right.
No,
absolutely. It's anyone that is there to feed on you. It is not a mutual relationship. Now, I can say that because I'm studying it from this, you know, and I've worked with it for so many years. But I would say there are many women who would say, no, no, I got a lot of, you know, he was a great dad and he was good partner and he took us on all the vacations. And, you know, you can ask them, did he ever do anything that, you know, caused you to feel uncomfortable, unworthy, criticized, judged? Oh, yeah. Well, he used to call me fat all the time. Oh, yeah. He used to leave and go out with other women. And I mean, it would go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
during the course of the work, being able to say, okay, those things aren't okay.
Yeah, right.
You've contracted.
Let's not treat that as an isolated incident. This is all part of the same. This is all in the same bucket, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I do the work, I will let them know that any of these sort of pathological folks, narcissists, sociopaths, low-functioning borderline folks, they are going to do a great job of manipulating and they are going to show up. Initially, you are going to feel like you've met your soulmate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he will listen to you so that he hears everything he needs to match.
So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product and it's called Celevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout or if you've had like several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Celevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Celevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day. And what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Celevate.com, which is C-E-L-L-E-V-8.com. And use my special promo code, the AllisonK2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this.
And he will lay it out for you and you will fall into the trap effortlessly.
Yeah, I just want to point out, like, I have male friends who have female partners who are like this too. This isn't just limited to men. I just want
absolutely
to think about that.
Yeah. I happen to work with more women in this situation. But it's also not just straight women. So,
yeah, totally.
You know, 100%. This is an equal opportunity employer. It all just depends on, you know, who they've been raised by, who they were, you know, exposed to very early on, and
totally.
The impact that it had on their own capacity to form attachments, relationships, and really that is not so able to form attachments and relationships.
Yeah.
And it inhibits the, you know, unfortunately, the development of that sense of self.
Yeah. So let's then go on to, can you give us like some tips or pieces of advice to like, just, you know, without giving away everything that you teach, like give us a little bit of a framework of like for people listening that they can maybe start to work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they find themselves in this situation and they're wondering, I've done all the things, I've, you know, worked with a therapist and all that, nothing seems to be working. Sometimes
therapists
I think they
are
just
often
need
my
to
best
hear something from someone else too.
Sorry. Right. Therapists are often my best source of referral. So because I do something specific and I do it a specific way, I've also had so many of my clients and women that I've worked with say, you can't do this alone. That is something that makes us different. We have built a community, not only of clients who interact with one another, but mentors and therapists. So I don't think there's anything that I could say where then somebody's going to snatch it up and say, oh, well, now I can do what you do. Okay, well, you okay, go for it. So some of the tips that I talk about are, you know, before you leave versus after you leave. Before you leave, oftentimes you are going to feel confused, depressed, muted, silenced, exhausted, because you spend all of your energy trying to keep the narcissist in play. So I often tell people that the first goal, if you haven't left yet, or if you're still in the job with the narcissistic boss, is be where the narcissist is not. So even if you can just manage 5 minutes a day, I'd like to say, shoot, if you're at work 5 minutes an hour, go to the ladies' room. Go to the ladies' room in the Starbucks across the street. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I like that. Go where the narcissist is not.
Yes. And, you know, if you've got a really highly controlling narcissist, that may be a challenge. But if you can get into a room that locks for 5 minutes a day and you just study who you were before. And I would say go back as far as you need to a place where you felt happy or content or simply neutral. Sometimes it's childhood. You know, sometimes it's babyhood.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just directly before this relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on, you know, when people started to experience the symptoms. So that's kind of the first tip.
Yeah.
The second tip is, you know, surround yourself with either people or items that help you remember who you are.
Okay.
Because when we get with a narcissist or somebody who is pathologically minded, we have to do so much to keep them in play. It chips away at who we are and our memory of who we are.
Yeah.
Because we just become that person's fill in the blank.
Yeah.
You know, wife, lover, friend, family member, employee. And what we have to do to keep it all in the air is tragic.
Yeah.
So being able to regularly be with someone who can remind you of who you have been before this relationship, or looking at pictures, pulling out photo albums, pulling out your phone these days, right? Anything that reminds you of who you were before. I think the third thing is that we don't do this alone. We don't recover alone. And so finding others in similar situations, it might even just be a forum online. It could be a community like what we've built. It could be friends that you know have been through this or family members.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge piece of the pie when it comes to recovery. So if you are able to do those things and you're able to get yourself to the place where you have at least enough energy to exit or consider exiting, then I'd say resources.
Yeah.
Right? Is there money enough to leave? Are there others who will help you on the other side when you've exited? Do you have a place to go? Mm-hmm. A place to land?
Yeah.
Do you have a therapist, an attorney? You know, these are all things that can be incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Once you've exited or gotten them to exit or however that works out, then, you know, then we begin the real journey, mm-hmm. which is the way you find yourself again. Mm-hmm. You know, as we started the late 60s, early 70s, you know, finding yourself, this is maybe they had a good thing that they were thinking about back then, right?
Yeah.
Now this is a whole new ball game, a whole new version of that.
Yeah.
And when we get there to that space where we can actually take a breath, then we've got to do everything we can to keep from going back to that relationship or picking another relationship just like it.
Which, as human beings, we're inclined to do because it's just repeating the pattern.
We know the routine. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So it is ditching that magnet, it becomes imperative.
Yeah. And a lot of that, I think, you know, to your point, I'm just going to echo this for people listening, how important it is to anchor within yourself, to really work on yourself. What do I want to be different? How can I get back to who I was? And what does that look like? And give yourself the time and the space to breathe to be able to do that.
Yes. I have many, many people who come in and they'll say, you know, what can I do to get them to change? Mm-hmm. And the reality is, narcissists by nature do not have the capacity to change.
Yeah. And they're not interested.
You know, a high-functioning borderline person, we've learned, especially using DBT, can in fact embrace the diagnosis, learn the skills, shore up the sense of self, and become a productive and healthy member of relationship. Mm-hmm. Low-functioning, not so much, because they won't embrace the diagnosis and they won't embrace the work and they will act just like...
I personally think a lot of people who have the tendencies that you're describing, that they don't think they're the problem. And that there is part of the problem, right?
Absolutely.
That they think everyone else is to blame. They don't want to take responsibility.
Well, if you think about it this way, if they don't have a sense of self, they don't actually have the capacity to take responsibility.
Yeah, it's very true.
So it's hard when we want them to apologize. We want them to take responsibility. It's good to want things, I've always told my children. It's just not going to happen with a narcissist or a sociopath.
Yeah, set your expectations and understand that.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be realistic. Can this happen?
Yeah.
And in my pretty well-trained and well-educated opinion, the answer is no.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think what we also have to remember is that at the end of the day, regardless of what's happening, and I'm not condoning anything that any of that, is that we ultimately have to take responsibility for what we decide to do.
Sure.
You know, and, we take responsibility for the decisions we make and the fact that we're where we are.
Right. Now, I think the hard part is that when we do get sort of beaten down, not, you know, figuratively and less so, you know, literally, when we get into that emotionally derailed position, it is very difficult to physically get ourselves up and out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
More often than not, if we have children with that person, the abuse veers towards the children, something happens with the children, threats are made, and that boost of adrenaline is all that's required.
Yep.
Out we go.
Yep.
So it isn't even that, you know, prioritizing the self that happens on its own. Oftentimes, there is some outside event.
Yeah.
Sometimes the outside event is the narcissist does something or sociopath does something like gets arrested for as a peeping Tom or, you know, for something, you know, even work issues.
Yeah.
And that is enough. Like the door opens and then the person can go through and finally exit that relationship.
Yeah.
Once they're out, though, it's really imperative to shore up the resources like you can't believe, you know.
Yeah.
That is what makes the difference.
Yeah.
And I think...
Well, we only go so far by ourselves for anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You
know? Yeah.
And what we've discovered is traditional therapy will get you a good distance.
Yeah.
But then you have to consider some other things that go beyond traditional therapy. Like, for instance, you know, did you pull that soul out of the vault and put it back in the driver's seat?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when it got there, you know, did you activate it? Did you liberate your voice into being? Did you liberate that part of you, that eternal divine part of you, into being? Are you able to embrace that sovereign self?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
And, you know, then once we are there, once we've done that work, and there are lots of different ways to do that, we use it with sound healing, but, you know, we're learning more and more about light codes and about, you know, different forms of healing that can allow that activation, that can allow us to embrace that divinity again. And however we get there, I mean, we do it a specific way, but however we get there, that's the point in which we can begin to reroute our trajectory.
Yeah.
We begin to revision our world ahead, what the career looks like, what the life looks like, what relationships look like. And once we get there, then we want to really ensure that we've got a great community around us that represents our new way of being.
Yeah, love that. So what's your best piece of advice as we wrap up? I'm thinking about the person listening who maybe just needs a nugget to chew on today, something that they can use to get a win for themselves today. What would you tell them?
I would say, are you living your life? I would ask them, what about your life right now represents you, who you are at the core?
Okay.
If it's one item in a bookcase, it might be worthwhile to take a look. Is the relationship a mutually beneficial and healthy one? And if it's not, how is it that you want to change that to allow yourself forward movement?
And there's always some forward movement that you can make.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every single day, every moment of every single day.
Totally.
For sure.
Totally.
Even if that's just into the bliss of being.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I totally get that. So this has really been very helpful, I'm sure, for a lot of people listening. What's the best way people can connect with you?
Sure. Our parent website is sagebreslin.com. For people who are really interested in this work, it's available at therosesystem.com.
Therosesystem.com.
The Rose System.
Or people can go to your personal site at drsagebreslin.com.
It's sagebreslin.com.
Okay.
Or you can go to therosesystem.com, which represents our work with folks in toxic relationships.
Got it.
That's where the community, you know, is.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I hear you. And you're on all the socials too?
I am.
Okay. Fantastic. Facebook, LinkedIn, the whole thing. Okay.
Yes. TikTok. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Amongst others.
there's so many now, it's hard to keep up. So
I know.
Thanks so much for making time to share your expertise with us today. It was very, very helpful. And I'm sure for a lot of people listening, it was hopefully exactly what they needed to hear.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. So for folks out there listening, if what we said today really landed with you, and really in particular, if you know somebody in your world who you think really needs to hear this conversation, I would really encourage you to copy the link and send it to them as a free gift for me. And if you like, you're more than welcome to connect with me on my site, www.theallisonk.com, and just hit the connect button in the upper right-hand corner and write to me, and then we will make sure that this episode, excuse me, gets sent to who you would like to get it today, if possible. Thank you so much for all of your support for us. We're super excited about what 2026 is going to bring, and we're just thrilled that you guys are along this ride with us. This is Allison Gatzkowski with The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. You're one step closer to living your ultimate life, so make it a good one.